Wow Along show today. We're joined by Gail as well as Sally, of course. This is our classroom technology focused show. We're talking about Chromebooks, we're talking about iPads, all kinds of listener feedback. Just a lot of fun we're having talking about technology and ministry. Stay tuned to join us. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody. This is Wells Tech, recorded on September 24th, 2013. This is episode 308. My name is Martin Spriggs. And I'm so happy that you decided to come back one more time, or maybe for the first time, and join us to talk about technology and ministry. I don't do that alone. In fact, I have a couple of co-hosts today, as this is our classroom technology-focused show. And as such, we have a special guest, Gail Potratz, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you?
I'm great.
And you are coming to us from the luxurious facilities at Emmanuel Lutheran in New London.
That is correct.
School in full swing, right?
Oh, yes. We're almost up to mid-quarter already.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Time for those parent-teacher conferences.
We have ours a little bit later, not till the end of October.
Oh, I know Debbie is getting prepped for those at Peace in Hartford. And as always, I shouldn't neglect to or assume that everybody knows that Sally's right there, Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota. It's still a little bit, it causes me to pause a little bit, Sally. I almost say sleep-e-i, but that's the last chapter. New chapter is in New Ulm. Hi, Sally.
That's right. I'm wide awake. No sleepy eyes here. I even had my Cheerios this morning.
You got to have some kind of cool story like you did for Sleepy Eye for New Ulm. So
yeah. Well, I'm excited because Gail's with us. My goodness, maybe the 6 year she's been joining us on this semi-regular basis. And she's added so much to our podcast. And we're looking forward to another year of podcasting with you, Gail.
That's one piece of consistent feedback we get is give us more Gail.
Well, I always like to do it, truthfully, because I always learn a lot myself. I force myself to try to learn some things for the show, so that's helpful to me as well.
Yeah, and this show should be no different. One of the things that we learned from our unconference is there is a lot of interest in Chromebooks and Google products in general, so we thought we would dedicate this classroom, and Sally's showing her Chromebook. I could pull mine off the shelf here or dust it off a little bit, and talk about Chromebooks and specifically implementation year two at Emmanuel Lutheran School in New London. Gail, you've gone through the process, the highs and the lows, the pros and the cons, and all of that related to getting Chromebooks in the hands of your students. So we felt while we have you, it would be good to talk a little bit about that.
Great. Well, I meet a lot of people who are going through the Chromebook experience for the first year this year. And since we're on year two, I like to share my experience in the hopes that I may prevent some people from going through some unnecessary pitfalls. Yeah. So
why don't we start on the positive side, some of the good things that are happening as a result of your implementation, the pros, and I think one of those is, mm-hmm. you know, is probably not hard to guess, and that's just the student excitement and having these in their hands and a new tool that they can use day in and day out in the classroom.
Right. We added a new, two classrooms full of them this year, and they were late in getting here. Google didn't anticipate the rush they were going to have, so they were a little slow in delivery, so ours didn't come until the second week of school, or actually the first week of school. So every day, every time I saw those kids in the hallway, are they here yet? Are they here yet? So yes, they're excited, and they can't do things fast enough. And the Chromebook, the good things about the Chromebook, obviously, when we talk about that, besides the excitement of the kids and the ability because of the price point to put them throughout the school, the usual things. The setup is remarkable. The you know, no imaging of machines, and just the time saving from the management console, and the ability to control things even down to a student, if you want to, is phenomenal. One of the greatest things I think that we do this year that we didn't do last year was Google made it possible during the summer to control the app store a little better. And you can actually go into the settings in the management console. There's about three settings you have to go through for each grade you want to do. So it's a little tedious, but you're able to pick the settings or pick the Chrome apps that you want on the machines and have them pushed out to the machines automatically, which is really nice. They flip them on and that propagates along the bottom of their screen, and of course they're amazed. And that way you can have what you need there right away. You're not constantly adding them. I mean, you still can if you find something, but you're up and ready to run even with the applications, which is huge, because after the first year of experimentation, we're pretty much set on a basic list of those that we'll be using. You can even set it so that the Chrome store, when the kids go to the Chrome App Store, they see a little tab in that whole list on the left-hand side. There's one that says emmanuelnl.org, our domain name. So they can go in there, and those are the apps they can get. If there's something that I didn't load that I stick in there later, they can go pick it out, but they don't have to search through the whole Chrome store. Sure. They
so
just go to our
the list that they have to select from. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Which is really very handy when you talk about fifth graders and getting places. That's quite handy. I'm an upper grade teacher, but I've been doing a lot of teaching in the fifth and sixth grade. To get people up and running and get some consistent file things started. And I relearned that, how you really do have to make it as simple as you can in order not to drive your teacher crazy.
Well, I would expect fifth graders are kind of like kids in candy stores. I know my mom is like that with her greeting card programs. Like, there's just so many options. You want to enjoy every bit of it. You want to install every single app you can. And that's probably not the wisest thing to allow fifth graders or eighth graders or any students who you want to keep focused on tasks to install apps galore.
So I think that's been a huge plus this year. And then also when we talk about hardware, I mentioned some of the good things. One of the things I was disappointed about this year in the new model, because now we have the Series 3 Samsung Chromebook is what we have. We have the Samsung 500 series. Now we have the Series 3. Doesn't quite make sense to me. That's the 3 is the newer one, though. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they have an HDMI port, which is great, except that there is no dongle for this machine that you can hook up to a VGA projector. Like when we got the first set, they all came with one, so there was really no reason. We didn't need 22 of them, but I could hook up to the projector easily. This machine, you can't hook up to a projector easily or cheaply. It can be done, but not with
if
one
the projector
connection.
Doesn't have a
HDMI.
Right.
And I mean, most, let's face it, most of our schools have VGA projectors at this point. So slowly that will change, but right now we're in the, you know, so I'd like to have them looking at the same thing with me, and I really can't, because I'm not going to invest in that $79 piece to do this at this point.
That has to be a piece of hardware that sits in between that does the conversion, right? That's a scaler,
Yeah, and maybe even two. It seemed to me like the things I read, there were two connections to make. So I didn't go there. I was disappointed, though, that you couldn't project to a VGA. That I think that's huge for most of us right now. So that was kind of a downer. But the software is constantly being improved. And I just mentioned some of those in the management section. So,
Gail, I would guess that it probably takes some time for teachers to figure out best practices. I mean, again, they're kind of like teachers in a candy shop. They have a lot at their disposal. Do you have recommendations or experience with bringing your teachers up to speed?
Definitely. That is a huge piece of this, because if you just turn your faculty loose, you get kind of a mess. I would really, really, and I know this is hard because in working with teachers in classes and just meeting them here and there, most people don't have a technology coordinator that has time to do all this. So it's kind of one person taking it on amidst everything else. And what gets lost in the translation there is the professional growth. And you really have to schedule some time. We don't have nearly enough time. We do a little bit in fall and spring before school starts and after it's out. But then during the school year, I only get like a half hour every fourth Wednesday during our meeting time where I get the faculty. And we worked pretty much all year just on Google, getting it, being able to use it. So in a sense, it really stalled some of our educational things as to moving toward, you know, more project-based education and things because we had to learn this huge system. And so there is, but you have to do it. So now we're really, we have the system kind of down and we're going into really more education than we were just Google all last year. But I think the key is consistency in the way that you do things when you're training your faculty. We have a set way. There's three things that you really have to consider. It's how you're going to deliver material to the students, how students are going to hand in material to you, and then how you're going to grade the material and keep yourself sane. So there's really those three things. And the third one really is not bad at all. And if you're the science teacher that has three grades of kids doing the same piece of homework, then it gets a little tricky, especially when the homework is the kind that goes back and forth. It doesn't hand it in once and that's it. There are good ways to do that, and we're working on those things right now.
So how do you do that, that last one in particular, the grading side? Is there a consistent way that all the teachers do that?
Let me back up to the first one. And
oh, sure.
Kind of progressive there. The hand-in process for the kids, what we do is we really, shared folders is our huge thing. So every grade has a shared folder and has a subject for every class in that folder, which means the course is a shared folder too. So the kids are taught that when they're going to, let's say, type an essay, they go to the fifth grade shared folder, they go to the writing folder, they open that, and then they go and create a new document, because now that document is right in that folder. They don't have to move it there, they don't have to, so it's in that folder. So that's what we teach them, first of all, is to go navigate to the correct folder, then make your document, okay? So then they don't have to really do any sharing themselves. It's all been done by the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we have them hand in their work, we have a standardized hand-in naming of documents. So, for example, if I'm student number 4 in the alphabet, I always number all the kids. And so if you're number 4, you would hand in a piece of writing called O4, space, after 20 years, the name of the assignment, space, and then your initials. So everybody in fifth through eighth grade knows that whenever they name a document, that's the standard naming pattern. So then when the teacher looks at that whole folder, it's really nice because you can look right down those numbers and you know if they're all in there or not. Very, very easy. The kids can find their own easily enough. Okay. Now you have to realize the way we're doing this is they're all shared folders, so all those kids can look at each other's work. So If in many cases, that's okay. That's a good thing. There are times you don't want to do that, and then you'll have to go to some other methods. But that's our standard method.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I like about what you described, Gail, was the fact that you said all the kids in fifth through eighth grade know to do this. So it's not just one teacher or one grade level that's implemented a standard, but you implemented it and they can be comfortable with that for all 4 years in their upper grades there. So
right.
That's pretty wise, I would guess.
Consistency, yes. Sure. And that's so important. And then how the teachers get the things to students, we have a couple of ways we do that. And that's up to the teacher more, but we really only have two ways. Through the web page, you can use the web page with the link. So anybody with the link can get this file or folder. So you use the link and put it on your web page and kids can get your information that way. Or you can share it with them in the usual sharing method. So that's basically the two ways we use to get teacher information.
Sharing, meaning you create a doc and share that.
Yeah. Yeah, you just share. We've created, you know, grade 8 at Google.EmmanuelNL.com. So we have groups for each of the grade levels. So if a teacher wants to share something out to a group, you can very easily just use the group name and share it out to them.
Ah, sure.
Okay. So, okay, so that's our two ways of getting things out. Now, the grading thing is a little bit different because each teacher grades depending on the subject. Like being a literature language arts teacher, although I'm now teaching integrated geography and history with that, so it makes a little difference, but we do a lot of writing. So for me, I do a lot of shared where the kids develop a shared document in those folders we talked about back in number one. And then we go back and forth on the document and comment. We make big use of the comments, the little option command M. Option command M, and then you just write a comment. The kids get the comments. They look at them. They go into their work and they see, you know, oh, yeah, that I could say that better, or yeah, that doesn't make sense. And then they go respond to all of those. They're not supposed to erase them, resolve them. They just respond to them. And I'm the only one that can say resolve. Okay, we can talk back and forth as many times as we want, but I'm the only one that can say resolve. And what's beautiful about the comments is you can always go back and get the comments. And by the way, one little thing, a lot of people don't catch this, and I didn't at the beginning either, but after you do the comments, they do all go away. But then you open the document and you go up to the big comments button at the top and hit that button and they all come back.
When you say resolved, is that a feature or that's just nomenclature you use?
That's a feature. Okay. On the top of the little comment box, it'll say resolve. Okay. And that means you got that problem taken care of.
During that process, the other kids, because you have a shared folder concept, they can see your comments as well?
They could do that. And that is a privacy concern. I guess in our situation, it's wonderful to work in a situation that we have because, you know, we teach people to respect each other. And honestly, the kids are so busy doing their own thing.
Right.
They don't have time to go read what somebody else is doing. They got their hands full with what they have to do. And we have not had any problems in 2 years doing it that way.
Okay.
There are times that we don't grade on those papers. Like we comment, but then when the kids know that the final grade, if there is a letter grade, there can be all kinds of comments, but if there's a letter grade as a final grade, that's always in Power School.
Yeah.
And you can also make comments then in Power School.
Power School or another grade book
program. Another grade book program.
Yeah. Right.
Because then
like
they're
that.
The only ones that see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Schoology actually is really slick with how it works with Google now. So we aren't using that, but that is a pretty slick program to do.
Gail, I just want to insert a comment here. I believe in our pre-podcast discussions, you mentioned your fifth graders that you're including with this whole process aren't actually on Chromebooks. They're just using the Chrome browser, and you're kind of managing them the same way through your groups and things like that.
Right. Right. So, we have Chromebooks in 6th through 8, and the old MacBooks are now in the 5th grade. But I took everything off the dock except the Chrome browser and the typing program that they still use to make it easy. And we just use it pretty much like a Chromebook. It's not exactly the same, but many of the features can be managed just the same with the console. You know, they all have their account. They, of course, all have to have their Google account, which they do.
So I'm just thinking about schools that don't have any Chromebooks or even any laptops that are still in that old model of the computer lab, which is fine and workable. They still could be using Google Apps for Education. That might be a good way to ease into getting Chromebooks in the future, is to get them used to the environment.
Right. Oh, definitely. If you can work it on any machine before you get those, just the same way if you set up personal accounts before you become a Google Apps for Education school, if you use the personal Gmail accounts to do this, you know, anything to get your feet wet.
Kind of incremental, right? Then. Or it could be. It doesn't
Although
have to be.
You still have to have machines that can handle that. Like our old Macs, that our computer lab is Emacs running 10.4. So they can no longer even update Firefox or a lot of things. and they can't do the Chrome browser on there. Okay. So then they're stuck. So you can't go back real far and do that. But
Okay.
Well, great. That's a great rundown. So we should probably jump into a little bit of some of the challenges that you've had. I'm sure it has not been all Shangri-La there in your Chromebook land.
Oh, no.
What kind of challenges have you seen in year two?
The challenges are the fact that the technology coordinator makes a lot of human errors. Yes. Luckily, Google is there to bail me out, honestly. We had all of a sudden teacher emails showing up in student accounts.
Not good, usually.
No, not good. For about 2 weeks, and I could not figure out what in the world was going on. I should just learn. Just call Google right away. But I always try to figure it out myself first. So it took 2 weeks. And finally, I did call them. And what had happened was it was in the management console, and this must have been when I was setting up the new Chromebooks, because it was right at the beginning of the school year. I had changed a setting in there, and that's what I needed to just uncheck one check mark, and everything was good. But, of course, then we're stuck with all that email. You still have to go in there by hand and get that all out. But the lady at Google actually, it was a two-week span. And, of course, it was right when school was starting up, so it was probably more email than ever. But the lady at Google actually went out and tried to find third-party extensions that might help me remove the email that's already in there.
Wow.
She couldn't find any, but that's a tribute to the kind of people that work for Google and how they support their product. Really very, very nice. We also had a huge fiasco. I can't say it strongly enough. When you're training your teachers, train them in how to properly share documents. If they want them to be private, if they want them to be open to anybody. Anybody in the domain can find them. Okay, there's one setting in settings in the Google Chrome management that is very important there. And if that isn't set correctly to private being the default, you'll have your teacher folders being able to be accessed by everybody in the domain. And you don't want that. And to go along with that, then you have to teach teachers also that when someone shares something with them, kids too, but teachers really goof this up more than kids. When somebody shares something to you and you see it, you go to shared with me and you see it on the right-hand column, not in your drive, but on the right-hand column, you should always move it into your own drive. But you can only do that when you see it in your right-hand column and you go up to the top. If you check the shared item and go to the top, it'll say move to my drive. That's the safe way to move it to your drive. We had people always moving things to their own drive, and therefore it'll give you the message nobody else will be able to see this if you move it to your own drive because it's a shared document. And if you put it in a folder on your drive that isn't a shared folder with those same people, they won't be able to see it.
Right.
And they warn you, but for some reason, people still do that.
Right.
So they move it over, and then all of a sudden, we're at the faculty meeting. Oh, I don't have that. Where's that? That's the agenda. Where is that? So that's a huge thing. First of all, set it upright, set the sharing upright in the management console, and then make sure teachers understand how to move things into their own drive without taking them away from people.
It's really awesome that you're willing to share all these tips, Gail. I know that there's a lot of people out there that are implementing Chromebooks and learning along with you. And some of it is just things you have to live through and experience. And and then you understand it a lot better once you do.
Yeah, once you make a mistake, it's a big one, you get it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great that you're sharing your experience this way. There's other ways you can get help. You mentioned Google Help.
Right.
We want to put a plug in for a Google community that was started by our other educational technology correspondent, Jason Schmidt. And it's just of Wells schools that are using Google. And it's been a very active community. Jason teaches some online classes for Martin Luther College using Google apps. And he started this community kind of associated with his classes. And it has grown. There's a lot of Google Apps for Education schools out there among the Wells. And if you aren't part of Jason's community, it's great. It's a great resource. So be sure to join that. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Yep. I second that. That's a great place to go.
Mm-hmm. All right, Gail, thanks for your expertise there. And you know, next time you're on, we'll get a do a little checkup, see how things are going, you know, on in the school year. Let's move along to our ministry resources section.
Yep, and I found something special to share there. It's kind of hot off the press. I was looking at the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary's Vimeo feed. So this is a list of videos produced by Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. And they have quite a few. The bulk of the content there is going to be their daily chapel services, and they archive the video from chapel services. But just recently, it says, 18 hours ago, so sometime yesterday, they uploaded this video titled Heritage and Hope, Celebrating 150 Years at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. And I know this fall, that's a really big emphasis there at the seminary, that it's their 150th anniversary. And this is a fantastic video of celebration that you could share perhaps on your church website. You could embed it. There's a link to share right here in the overlay of the video, where you can grab some embed code and put it on your church website and rejoice with the seminary in their 150th year. I think it's about 7 minutes long, so it's very well done, and I think you would appreciate watching it and perhaps sharing it maybe on Facebook or on your church website. Check it out.
Great. Good find. Let's move on to our tips of the week, our freshly minted new segment. I think this is week 3 for our tips. And Gail, we're going to let you go first. You've kind of combined your tips and pick of the week all in one. And you talked a little bit about screenshots and screencasting on a Chromebook. Why don't we play a little sample that you did for us, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. Hi. Today, I'm going to use my trick to share with you my tip. My tip for today is how to take a screenshot on Google Chromebook. My trick for today is to use a Google Air Hangout like this one to produce a screencast on a Chromebook. Let's go ahead and share my screen. On my screen, you see a Google presentation that I put together earlier about adding a screenshot. I show you in the second slide here that there are some keyboard commands that you can use to do this. Control plus the switcher key will give you a whole screenshot. Control, shift, and the switcher key allows you to take a selection of the screen. So let's go to my third slide and demonstrate how this would work. I'm going to go out to a website, and this is the website that has a diagram that shows those keyboard commands. So I just want this selection right here, so I'm going to go Control Shift and switcher key and the little cross here. Selection tool appears. I make my selection, and now I can go back to my presentation. I can say insert an image and choose an image to upload. And there should be the screenshot that I just took at the top of the list up here. I'll select it. It will upload it and pop it right into my presentation. Pretty slick. So that's all there is to it. That's my tip of the day, and that's my trick. Thanks for watching.
Thanks for that, Gail. I think my first question is, how did you do the screencast? Now, that was on a Chromebook?
I did everything on a Chromebook, which okay. I I had never done it, and I really wanted to be on a Chromebook today with you guys and do it live. Uh-huh. But I guess I was a little leery because I was feeling pretty good about it when it worked last night. But, you know, being on the wireless network and doing this with you guys, I didn't know if we would have, because that is one issue when you Chromecast in the way that I use the Google Hangout to do it, you do have some delay. So if you're like teaching an app that way, where you have to do a lot of, like a editor, you know, like a image editor or something like that, where that takes enough bandwidth to do that, then you really get a lot of lag. So it isn't perfect.
So you did a Google Hangout basically and recorded that session to do this?
Yes. Podcast?
Okay.
A Hangout on air.
A Hangout on air, right, with myself, with no one right. else.
Yeah, you don't need invite to invite anybody. Right.
No.
Yeah, they used to require you to invite someone.
Yeah, keep in mind that even if you do that, it's still public.
Yes.
You don't have any choice about making those Google Hangouts on air private. So that's just one reminder. So you don't want to really do private stuff there. Now you can always remove it later once it's recorded like we do for this show. But when I pull it all together and put the finishing touches on it. But that seemed to work very smoothly as far as I could tell. So
I was very surprised. It was, yep. You know, it was very nice. I think you could use that.
Yeah, and the tip is good, too, the ability to capture, do some screen captures. I didn't know that you could do that so easily on the Chromebooks as well. So
I had to learn that when we were doing a project last week in class. So
okay, very flexible. I think slowly and, you know, slow but steadily, Google is providing the tools necessary to not feel as much pain in leaving, let's say, a regular laptop. There are still things, you know, with especially on the video, yeah, the multimedia side. But
right,
I would say in most of the other areas, you know, there are qualified replacements.
Well, they're workarounds, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they're really like right. It's a workaround. But make sure that in the section there, in the, I forgot which section that I put it in, the pick of the week. If you go to the website there, where I think his name is Brian Bennett. He mentioned some other ways you can do this too. I just use one way to screencast. He mentions like two or three other ways that will also work. So the way I picked was, I guess the way I thought I could do it most easily for what I wanted to show. But he also mentions that there is an app out there now. There are some like whiteboard apps that you can use on the Chromebook, and you could use those to screencast also. So take a look at his other set selections there too, because I just used one example of how to do it.
Cool.
Excellent.
Good. Thank you for doing that. Appreciate it. My tip of the week, let me screen share my little tip here. And that is a PowerPoint tip. And this will apply, I believe, to PowerPoint 2007 and up. So you can be pretty moldy in your version of PowerPoint.
And we are.
7, 2010, or 2013. The tip is really all about presenter view. And presenter view is useful in lots of situations. I use it all the time once I discovered it. And I don't think a lot of our teachers especially maybe even know that it's here if they do use PowerPoint. And this is something that I talk about in my MLC class as well, that this is a great way to keep in front of you the information you need. But on the screen that the students or the audience sees, they see just the slide that you have created. So on your own screen, you see kind of the existing slide and the next slide, or a preview of the next slide, which is great, because then you kind of know what's coming next and what not to say, let's say, on this slide, because now you're going to cover it in the next slide. You also see speaker notes, which I hope everybody's taking advantage of, embedding those into your PowerPoints. Most presentation softwares have that as well. Keynote has that. I think even Google Presentation has that now. So you have your speaker notes, so you have those in front of you. And then you have some other tools, annotation-type tools, a highlighter, a pointer, so that you can operate on your screen and point to things on the big screen that the viewers are seeing that you're operating on the smaller screen. There's also at the bottom a little slide sorter that you can use to go directly to slides, so you don't have to get out of the presentation, go find the slide, restart presentation view. I see a lot of presenters do that. So this is a really handy tool. We'll put a couple links in the show notes. One is kind of a step-by-step of all the features, which are pretty stable even since 2007. And then one is an entire course that is available on especially 2013, which they've improved the interface and a couple of tweaks that they've made, but essentially the same tool. So if you're not familiar with Presenter View in PowerPoint, you may want to get smart on that and try it, because I think there's some usefulness in, especially for those of you that are using your computers and projecting to a larger screen.
Good stuff.
That is my pick or tip, I should say.
Do you know if that works for PowerPoint on the Mac?
It does, yes.
It does.
At least the later versions. I haven't tried the earlier versions. Okay. So, yep, there is a presenter view. All right, Sally, you have a tip of the week?
I do. I'm going to do a quick screen share and share with you, in keeping with our Chromebook discussion, that there is a list of keyboard shortcuts. This is one of the things that I was pointed to this summer when I attended Google Summit. The Chromebook doesn't have an insert key, an end or a home key, a page up or a page down key. And those are things that I kind of missed on the Chromebook keyboard. And so this list gives you ways to do that. For instance, page up is Alt and the up arrow. Our home is Control Alt and the up arrow. End is Control Alt and the down arrow. There's different ways to zoom with keyboard commands and print and save and all kinds of things on this extensive list of keyboard shortcuts. Found it very handy to make my Chromebook just a little more comfortable to work with. But what I want to show you is that you can also press Control Alt and the question mark, which is a shift key, and it will bring up a keyboard on your Chrome screen. So if you're wondering what these keyboard commands are, you can see the keyboard. And then if you hold down, for instance, the Control key, it'll show you the different commands associated with Control, or with the Alt key, it'll show you different commands associated with the Alt. And then if you do Control and Alt at the same time, you'll see the ones associated with that. So it's a nice feature with Control Alt question mark right there on your Chrome keyboard to give you those shortcuts and help you make use of them. So
helpful, especially with those Chromebooks, because they don't have a standard keyboard. They've got some special keys that do some cool things.
That's true. So
in Yale's video, you mentioned the the switcher key, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I never used until I used it in the video.
Oh, okay. There you go. So learn those keyboard shortcuts. The less time you spend moving from the keyboard to the mouse, you're going to improve your productivity for sure, especially for those repetitive tasks. Gail, you even mentioned one for adding comments to a Word doc, which you could do, or a Google Doc, which you could do with the mouse, but it's a lot easier just hitting that keyboard command. So
definitely.
Okay. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. And Gail, you already shared yours. So Sally, I think you're up again.
My turn. All right, I'm going to screen share one more time with you guys. And this time I'm going to point you to Google Apps for Education training program. For those of you that want to learn more about Google Apps for Education, perhaps you're on the front end of an implementation and you just want to learn more. There's several levels to their training program. You can ultimately become a Google certified trainer. But the individual qualification is the first step. And with individual qualification, you take a series of 6 tests, and then you get this individual qualification. You can go right to their testing center and sign up for the test. The total cost is $90. The 6 tests are $15 each, basically. But through their training center, even without the desire to take the test or anything, you can actually get to all the training materials. And currently they have 2 versions. They have the original training modules and then updated training modules. So they cover Google Apps for Education in general. There's a course on Gmail, one on Calendar, one on Drive, That's kind of a longer course, the drive one, because it covers docs and sheets and slides as well. There's one on Google Sites, and then there's a wrap-up course on other tools within the Google Apps for Education tool set. So without having to take any exams whatsoever, you can access the full training modules. And they're actually a series of Google Docs, actually. So if you go into the first one, you can see there's different chapters: introduction to Google Apps, getting around Google Apps, customizing Google Apps for your school, things like that. Or if you're interested specifically in training on Drive, then you can jump to that. And you can learn about sharing and privacy, printing and publishing. And then there's chapters on Docs and Sheets and Slides and Forms and Drawings. So you can get really in depth with the information that they share in these individual Google documents. It's like having the training manual, and it's here online for free. Even if you don't want to become a Google instructor or certified trainer, you can make use of all the resources Google makes available. So a good recommendation for any technology coordinator, for sure, that's diving into the Google Apps for Education realm. That's my pick.
Very good. Very timely, very appropriate. I'm going to actually, I don't know if we've ever actually picked this. Maybe we have. But my pick is also educationally focused, but not just. So it can be used for ministry purposes. And that's the good old iPad. I was kind of reintroduced to the iPad. I'd gotten away from it a little bit. And those of you that are viewing at home, I'm showing an iPad on the screen here. The reason that I got hooked up with it again and started using it and appreciating it was the new operating system that came out, iOS 7, which you have to, you don't have to install, but they highly encourage it. And there's not a lot new to it. I mean, it's definitely a new look, a new feel. I think its performance is about the same as the old one. Now, this is the, I think, a fourth gen iPad, just the 16 gigabyte model, Wi-Fi only. But what I am enjoying about it again is just the simplicity and the wealth of apps that are available for it, for almost anything that you'd want to do. So Apple was kind of the first in the tablet space, or at least the popularization of the tablet. And so their app store is bigger, I think, far bigger than Android or certainly Microsoft at this point. So, you know, it's my pick because I believe this is a valuable both educational tool, but also a ministry tool in general. So you have the ability to find all the apps that you would need, I think, for almost any purpose. And, you know, there are blogs about this. Our friend Guy Marquardt has an iPad in ministry blog that he's talked about some of the tools there. But the quality of the tool itself is a big win. Battery life is great. You can go for a few days of pretty constant use. Screen quality is good. The weight and all the accessories that we've talked, I think one of my picks in a previous Wells Tech was the Logitech keyboard, where you just insert this in the slot. Now you've got a fully functioning keyboard, but it also serves as a cover for it. So you have the ability to protect your iPad, becomes a little clamshell notebook, but then it goes along with you in that form. So I think there's still a lot of life left in the iPad line, despite all the competition that's out there. So if you're looking for something to get into that space, this is still probably the best place to go. Even though it's not an inexpensive proposition, you're still in that $500, $600 range, depending on what kind of capacity you want. But I think it's a good value, and you'll get a lot of use for it. I know, Sally, it's a constant companion for you.
That's right. I got mine right here, and I just want to put in a plug that mine's just a second-generation iPad, and I upgraded to iOS 7. No problems whatsoever. I'm really happy with it. So, yay. Yep. Love mine.
I would say my best feature of the new operating system is the keyboard. The keyboard is much more forgiving.
Oh, you think so?
I do think so, because okay. I have a detachable, a mobile keyboard as well if I'm really going to do anything on my iPad. But I do like to take it on trips and whatever, and I type on it a lot. And I think both on the phone and the iPad, the keyboard, I love the new keyboard. That's
the autocorrect feature. Yeah.
I think it's more forgiving. I think you can type more easily.
One thing I've noticed, and I've gone to a few kind of educationally focused conferences in the last year or two, and that's all you see. You see everybody there with an iPad and a portable keyboard of some kind. Mm-hmm. That's where they're taking their notes. That's where they're, you know, looking at email or surfing or whatever. It's just, it's the tool that's in use by a lot of people. So
I've gotten in the habit of taking notes during the sermon in church, but I use a stylus and use Notability app. But it's definitely my go-to, even for writing now.
Yeah.
My favorite.
I kind of cheated today with my pick because that's kind of a no-brainer. But I think sometimes you forget about the old, you know, the trusted sort resources that that is the iPad. So, Sally, I want to just insert a quick note of interest, and that is that we have an open position here in the Synod office, the new CMM. Center for Mission and Ministry here in beautiful Waukesha, Wisconsin. We have a software engineer / programmer position open. We had a resignation about a month ago. So we need somebody with especially Microsoft or .NET skills, database skills, just familiarization with SharePoint. I think this is a great place to work, a great opportunity. And if you have interest, or if you know of somebody who may have interest in the position, please go to the Wells website and look at job. There's a job opportunities link on the left side of the page, wells.net, where I will put a link in the show notes.
Definitely.
Sally, community feedback. We're running a little bit late here, but we have a lot of feedback we don't want to overlook.
We do.
So talk fast.
Okay. The timer's on, huh? First up, we heard from Pastor Clint Rogus, who asked a question about syncing his Google Calendar with his iOS device. Timely conversation for those of us on iPads or iPhones. And I just want to point you to one quick link. It's google.com/sync. You'll need to be logged into your Google account, and it'll point you to different ways to sync. If you want to sync your Gmail versus your contacts, calendar, your Chrome settings, those kind of things. I think this is a good launching pad. With your calendar, when you set it up initially, it syncs just your main calendar, but then you can go in and check off which calendars you want to see. I know Clint specifically wanted to see the Christian worship lectionary calendar that we provide, and he was able to make that work. But, you know, just come here and explore the links.
Yeah, next Google up, makes that pretty easy, actually. I think when you go into iOS, it's a pretty straightforward process.
Yeah.
It asks you right there, which do you want to sync? And you say yes or no to each one.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we had an email from our Wells Tech Hall of Famer, Pastor Rob Gunther. And there's several things to
forever
share
known
from Pastor Gunther. He's out in Kenai, Alaska, and he is making use of a lot of different things. I don't know if I have all the apps up in order, but we'll just kind of talk through some of the things he shared. One is envelopes. With the letter M starting that spelling. And this is good for those of you who might be familiar with the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University process, where he encourages you to budget each month and put aside money in actual physical envelopes so that you have the cash to spend. And when the cash is gone from your envelope, you can be done with that category for them. And so this is an electronic way to do that. And it allows, multiple people to dive into the envelopes electronically, at least to keep up with the balances that you've budgeted for different things. There's a mobile app for that as well. And I think I do have my tabs out of order. So next up, he talked about getting healthy and using apps such as the Lose It app, where you can keep track of what you're eating and those kind of things. He also mentioned in his email that he's using the Runkeeper app.
My Lose It
today. Yeah, there
right
you go.
There, my Cinnamon Toast Crunch this morning, 130 calories.
Excellent. Runkeeper, Martin, I don't know if you use that one as well. He says that for him it's Walk Keeper.
Yeah, it would be what it would be for me too.
And then he's exploring 7-minute workout apps, and he said there's a variety of them out there. Apparently that's a new trend where you do 12 different exercises for 30 seconds each, and the app will actually count down the 30 seconds. So it'll tell you, do jumping jacks for 30 seconds, and it counts down. And then you get a little bit of a break, and it gives you the next exercise to do. So several of those out there. There's one called 7 Men. There's one called 7-Minute Workout. Maybe you want to check those out as well. And then finally, just staying healthy is drinking a lot of water. So there's an app called Water Minder where it will track how much water you've drank during the day and encourage you or remind you to drink water so that you get it all in. So great stuff, Pastor Gunther, and we greatly appreciate you sharing.
Cool.
And you know what? I realized I don't have it open, but he also made mention of follow up then. I should open that link.
He's talked about that before, and that's the email system or the tool where you can send an email or forward an email to a specific address or a specific coded email that will remind you. So you can say something like 7 days, or remind in 7 days, and in 7 days it'll remind you tomorrow or whatever. And I think there were some new features he talked about in that email.
There were. He specifically mentioned that you can do task now. So if you send the email tomorrow-t, the dash T makes it a task, and then you get the email tomorrow, but you keep getting it day after day until you mark it complete.
Oh, boy.
So a good way to nag you.
I don't know.
He sent one to every month.
Yeah.
Every month dash T. And so once a month, he'll get an email that says call Bob or whatever it is that he needs to be reminded of or nudged of. And until he marks it complete, he'll keep getting those emails daily until he marks it complete. So a new feature of follow up then.
Very nice.
Yep. Next up, I'm going to share my screen for this one again. See if I can make that work. Our friend Ryan Rosenthal pointed us to the fact that UW Oshkosh campus is hosting a Google and Intel mini summit. This is going to be on October 12th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And there's still room to get in. It's $75 to register. They've got a huge lineup of presenters for their summit. And they're going to be talking about Google Apps for Education and flipped classrooms and blended learning and YouTube classrooms and Chromebook one-to-one deployments and lots of other topics that fit right in with what we were talking about today. So if you're looking for some face-to-face Google goodness, then maybe you want to attend UW Oshkosh's Google Summit.
Cool.
We had some tweeting going on this week, Martin. Maybe you want to share what you were tweeting about this week.
Yeah, three articles I wanted to reference, and I'll share the screen here. One is entitled, Is There Life After Email? Yes, and it's amazing. This is from fastcompany.com, from Scott Birkin. Not quite sure how to pronounce his name. He's the author of a book that I actually want to read, The Year Without Pants. Kind of a funny title, but it's a productivity book. On his time at WordPress.com, a company that, pinch us, doesn't rely on email. And a very interesting read, why they did it and how they did it. They felt, and they make a good case, or he makes a good case, that email is one of the most antiquated technologies that we have on our computers. It has not changed in years, and it just doesn't fit the way we work anymore, and it does create overhead that we may be able to get out of. And I'm not going to spoil the ending for you, so go ahead and read the article. But he makes a good case for a way to conduct business without email or with very little email. So next article from TechCrunch, the flipped classroom boosts grades 5%. Why that's as big as we can expect. Now, when you say flipping a classroom will only increase grades by 5%, that doesn't sound like a very big number, but they make a very good case why that's a huge number.
Yeah.
And you know, they do some study and some really hardcore research here about some of the other things that have been tried to boost grades and how they've only been able to achieve maybe 2%, 3%, 4%. Here, flipped classrooms suggest even a 5% or 5.1% increase based on this most recent study. And I think most of our listeners probably know what flipped classrooms are at this point. Flipped classrooms are the ability to kind of turn around the instruction side of the educational process, where the students will view a video and then they come into the classroom to essentially do homework or engage with the teacher or do other kinds of educational activities other than listening to the lecture or the presentation of the material. So, interesting article by Gregory Ferenstein. So, take a read if you are interested in flipped classrooms. And the last article that I wanted to share was one from Lifehacker, which we've referenced a number of times in the past. How to use mind maps to unleash your brain's creativity and potential. We've talked, Sally and Gail, about mind maps a lot on this show, probably not in the last few months, but certainly a lot in the past. And this is just a great article on mind mapping in general, what's behind it, why is it so popular, and finally some of the tools that are available that you can use, both free and paid for, that will help you get started in this, and some good educational tools as to how to think about it and how to get going with it. Very extensive article, and at the end they have a number of good links that will help you learn both the fundamentals and explore some of the tools and stay up to date on the latest in mind mapping. So just a good find for those of you considering mind maps, both for your own personal use, business use, or classroom use.
You know, the more I use mind maps, the more my brain changes to work well with mind maps. And reading what the internet has done to your brains, I think the book selection that we're doing right now, Martin, on the podcast, I think it's more what mind maps have done to my brain, and that they really have changed the way I think, and in a positive way, I believe.
Yeah, that part, sure. I think
good
so.
Good stuff. All right, a couple more quick links to share. One of them is from my friend Gail Potratz, who shared a link via Digo to a list of Google Form templates, Gail.
Oh, Kelly Kern is the person who put those together, right? And I ran across them when we were looking for different options for grading, and we talked about that a little bit. And Martin, I never got back to answer your question about the grading on the Google Chrome. So sometime we'll talk. We do two different ways, and we should talk about that sometime, but not right now. it's too long of a subject. But these I found in doing some research for that kind of thing, and these were good because she has these little self-grading multiple choice things that she has out there. Spelling, correct spelling, you can put in your own words. A lot of things for spelling have words that are pre-put in, you know, and I'd like to put in my own words that went with a reading story or whatever. There's just a lot of forms that she's already developed, a lot of Google Forms, and they self-grade, which is what our teachers were looking for, was a way to make some of this grading easier. So just take a look at through some of those. They may work for you.
Excellent. One more link shared via Digo. I shared this one, actually, and it's called Google's Quick Office, now free for iPad and iPhone users. So we're tying it all together here. We're talking Google Drive, but on an iPad or iPhone. And, you know, it's very powerful, that Google Drive, when you're working specifically with Google Docs or Sheets. But now with this Google Quick Office app, you can actually work with Microsoft Office files via your Google Drive as well. So it's now a free download. I think it used to be about $10, and they've made it free. And it opens all different, you know, DocX or XLSX or presentation files, whatever your choice, and allows you to edit Office files using your Google Drive. So check out the Quick Office app for free.
Very good. All right, that should do it. If you are interested in providing feedback, you can do that by going to wellstech.wells.net and submit a comment there. You can email us, wellstech@wells.net, @wellstech on Twitter, and find us on Facebook, all kinds of social networking conduits that you can reach out to us with. And good old-fashioned voicemail. Go to our page, click the, I think it's an orange button on the right side, blue button?
Maybe.
I don't remember. It's on the right side. Click it and talk to us. We would love to hear your comments, feedback, suggestions for future shows, anything like that. Join the conversation. We'd love to have you. Next week, Sally, we are going to talk about mobile apps and one mobile app in particular. That's the Wells mobile app. And we're going to give you kind of a guided tour, some of the things that are in it and some of the things you can expect in versions yet to come. So tune in next week for Wells mobile app conversation.
I bet you'll be surprised at how much good stuff is there.
Yeah, I hope so. Let's close the show with the music of Joey Schumann. We're creeping up on Reformation season, so I thought I'd pick a Reformation hymn, A Mighty Fortress from Martin Luther. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
A shade art thou in the heat. A shelter art thou in the cold. Eyes art thou to the blind. A staff art thou to the pilgrim, an island art thou at sea, a fortress art thou on land, a well art thou in the desert, health art thou to the ailing. Ireland.